Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of the World Hoppers podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping out new readers navigate Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere, but also provide some discussion for longtime fans who may also want to introduce someone to the series. I am Cheyenne, and I am here with my co-hosts, Alfonsina and Ilana. Today, we will be discussing The Final Empire, and this will be full spoilers, but we will be avoiding spoilers for the rest of the series, including, well, the rest of Era 1, Era 2, Secret History, and Lost Metal. I don't think we will touch on anything on the Skadriel essay. No. I don't think there really is anything too spoilery there. But we will have spoilers for everything else, including all of Stormlight until Rhythm of War. I don't think there will be anything from Dawnshard coming up, but just in case. So if you're not caught up, go read and then come back. We'll be waiting for you. Yeah, it's great to be back. I wanted to start with some foreshadowing, as always, and I looked through Brandon's annotations for this, and one of them really caught my eye, knowing how the story ends. And so it says, it's talking about how he plans things, and it's like, other things, for example, are quite well planned. Want an example? Kelsier's warning about not flaring metals too much is a foreshadowing for book 3 of the trilogy. You'll see what I mean in a couple of years. So yeah, this was written before the other books were published. Also, there's something very important about Vin's brother that it'll be hard to pick out, but has been foreshadowed since the first book. Predictions!
I am so scared right now. From Ilana.
What do you think this is referring to?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I honestly thought that her brother was, like, dead, gone, like, nothing else happening there, so my mind is blown right now. I'm kind of... Not kind of. I am scared. I am concerned.
Everything can come back at you with Brandon. And things come back, especially in this.
True.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, because Mistborn was written all in one go, and then Brandon went back to fix things, like, for continuity. He actually wrote Hero of Ages before Well of Ascension parts of it. Because there was some part of All of Ascension he needed to figure out, and so he went ahead and wrote Hero of Ages. He did something similar with Era 2 of Mistborn, where he went and wrote Bands of Mourning before Shadows of Self, because there were some problems there that he needed to figure out.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Part of the reason why we got Shadows of Self and Bands of Mourning so close together. They were just a couple of months off in publishing. Which is a surprise to everybody, and I wish what we would get again.
Yeah, that was a gift. But yeah, this saga is... It's one of the things that has the best foreshadow I have ever read. It's wonderful to read again for the second time because you will catch so many things. It's done in a way that you won't feel like you are missing stuff.
Yeah, like half of my highlights are the color foreshadowing.
It doesn't make you feel like you're missing stuff. It makes you feel like you have to wait a little bit to get the answers, but when you read for the second time, everything was there, set up for you to see. But obviously, it's almost impossible to see if you haven't.
I'm surprised Amber from the Road to Tarvalon, she's been reading Mistborn. She just started the Cosmere, called a certain reveal from book 3 that is one I didn't call, and she didn't call one of the ones that most people seem to find more obvious. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's the foreshadowing is really well done because nothing is very, like, in-your-face glaring. There are some, like, tidbits that he put in there, but it's very much like... I'm trying to think of, like, an analogy that works. So, like, if you're in a room and there's papers everywhere, like, for Brandon, there will probably be, like, 5 papers that are actually important, and so it just kind of blends in with everything else. Whereas, like, with other authors, I feel like you walk into the room and on, like, the... computer is like this presentation slideshow where they're like, remember this important information sometimes. And I feel like it's just overdone. Whereas like he leaves the clues, but it doesn't disrupt the story at all. It isn't like this glaring billboard that's like, pay attention to this thing happening right here. He just like keeps writing and then it all makes sense later on. Because like he's definitely left the clues there, but there's nothing to make you stop and take you out of the story.
Yeah, definitely.
You would see some foreshadowing on the nature of the planet. And it's something that Brandon does in several books. Books in which you have a planet with certain geographical characteristics that are connected to the story that you're reading and the way the magic works and permeates everything there. And, well, if you are familiar with the realmatic theory that Brandon has on his books, you will see that it's so well done in Mistborn, the way that everything is permeated through the powers that are invested in this world, let's say, to keep it safe. Because we know that there are powers invested in each planet, or at least in most of them.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up later. Like, what shards do you think there are on Scadrial? You've probably heard their names before.
I'm not sure.
So it might not be like a huge like prediction thing. But you might have heard their names before. I think I've mentioned them to you, actually.
I think you did, and I'm trying not to pick up my phone and look it up. because honestly, I got so into the story. I got so into the, like, just general story that I kind of forgot about the shards. And I'm like, oh crap, I should have been looking out for that. Like, I need to go back and do all the research.
The time for that, it's going to be the Hero of Ages.
Yeah. No, you don't need to.
That's more like...
I'm just curious to see what your theories are.
And the end of the World of Ascension. The very end.
Yeah, the time for that is going to be end of World of Ascension and Hero of Ages.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so...
Yeah, it's really hard to predict them, which ones they are in Final Empire.
Because I went to go buy Well of Ascension and Hero of Ages, I clicked on the Hero of Ages, and then, like, the first line is, I think, part of the Sanderlanch in Well of Ascension for, like, the description.
Oh.
And so, luckily, for once, my really bad memory works for me, because I don't remember what it was, but I remember reading it in the moment and being like, oh no! Oh, and so, now I'm scared.
Yeah, because I think it's there.
Yeah. Because I think they mentioned which shard it was, but I just don't remember. So, yeah. I guess I'm grateful that I don't remember.
And I'm sure I've mentioned them to you before. Yeah.
Yeah, the foreshadow is done with the, of course, with the shards and the magic system, as well as the characters. The way that those two things connect with each other, because, as Chase said, there's some warning about flaring your metals when you have Adamancy, and that's gonna be plot relevant for some of the characters later. And it's starting to be plot relevant for Lin, for example, who is actually staying awake a lot of time. So it affects the way they are, the way they think, the way they can fight.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because that actually happens on a lot of the other magic systems. I think the most obvious example is Roshar with the soul casters.
Yeah. Yeah.
A similar thing ends up happening to them.
Yeah, it's the same when you are a Night Radiant.
I don't think we actually get the you get this, term.
This energy, this storm raging inside of you when you have the Storm Knight, but then when you run out, you get exhausted and very tired, and well, it's very similar to the future.
It's dangerous.
Future drug or something like that.
Oh, yeah, the Pewter Drag.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, honestly, I love how pewter functions and the, like, physical consequences that come from, like, dragging your pewter or flaring your pewter. Just, I love how physical those consequences are and how you can see those physical consequences with the other forms of the magic system. But, like, this one is so tangible. I love it. I'm a big, like, science nerd, and so I'm like, yes, there are consequences to your actions.
Yeah, and you see that a lot, like, in Brandon's Rules of Magic. I have the first one memorized, but it's slipping my mind right now. Ah, an author's ability to solve problems with magic is directly proportional to a reader's ability to understand said magic. And so if it's whimsical Lord of the Rings style, it shouldn't be used for problem solving, whereas if it's hard magic like Gallomancy, the whole point of it is problem solving. And then the other one is limitations are more interesting than powers, and like that whole thing. And so yeah, he talks about it a lot in those essays. I finally got the chance to read them on his website a couple of times, because I've heard the rules, I've heard him talk about them in class, but I actually got the chance to read the essays on his website the other day that I finally remembered to look them up. And so yeah.
So what about the magical mechanics that we see here? I mean, you probably, by the end of this book, you probably have seen some of them, but you still have foreshadow about more. You think you have seen what allomancy is on this book, but I promise you it's going to be more, because Brandon left space when he wrote it to expand it a little bit more with different things and different variables. But for now, I think that we have a lot of knowledge about basic allomancy and some of it about other metallic arts that exist on Skadrial.
Yeah, we know a little bit about ferrochemy, however you pronounce that. Yeah, there are a lot of similarities with other books. You were mentioning the similarities you were seeing with Stormlight, weren't you, when you started reading?
Yeah, they were really standing out with just the... Gosh, I'm trying to remember what exactly I said in the Discord, because I was much more put together that day. But basically just the way that the physics worked, and like, I know Cosmere physics is definitely a thing, and my little nerdy engineer heart loves it, but just the way in which, the lashings.
That
Kaladin uses just really reminded me of the, like, iron push and pull that you do whenever you're moving around, and just, like, the way that it functioned. There were so many connections there, and it was so familiar, almost. I know I probably read it backwards. You probably should read Mistborn before Stormlight, but it was nice to have that familiarity whenever you're going into such a long book series, whichever way that you do it. So I think that keeping these physics as a part of the universe not only makes the universe more real, but just helps the readers, like, to feel comfortable. Because once I was like, oh, I kind of know how this works. Like, not exactly, but I get the gist of it. Then I was more comfortable reading and understanding the characters. Yeah. And so I think that was just a really well-done thing on Brandon's part to keep the physics similar, if not the same, throughout the entire Cosmere. But I can't wait to see where this goes now, because I know throughout Stormlight we learn more about their abilities and there's more things coming out there. So coming from the Final Empire, I'm like, oh, there's got to be so much more that you can do with this. And I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it happened to me in Stormlight too, with Rhythm of War, the whole light thing with Navani. I had just finished studying that in Nature of Science. I had just finished studying quantum physics, well, at least the basics in Nature of Science. So that helped me understand so much. And actually yesterday, I was talking with my friends, and so we had set up like a PowerPoint night and whatever, and mine was Crash Course in the Cosmere. I don't care about spoilers with them because I know they won't read it, because it's such a big commitment. Even those, if some of them, like, do enjoy reading, it's such a big commitment that they do. And so it's like this person, you know, my notes were eternal. And then the light, I was like, how in the world am I going to explain this? Because I updated it right after Rhythm of War came out.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And, like, explaining the light was like, okay, some of you are going to have an easier time understanding this if you've seen quantum physics. Like, the friend of mine that is in Nature of Science with me, we had an easier time understanding it than the other ones. And then again, Brandon does have a science background. Like, he started in biochemistry before he switched his major to English.
Yes. And he's also mentioned on some conference he gave.
He switched it when he came back.
It was an event of his church in which he was talking about himself, basically. It was an interview. He said that he's got a scientific side that is not very interesting in the things that you actually do as a scientist, such as calculating this or that, measuring this or that, knowing the amount of mass you need to put together, blah, blah, blah. He's more interested in the consequences of the laws of nature.
The theoretical
side? I think so. That's probably it. I mean, he doesn't want to go and do the math behind the stuff. He wants to understand the stuff so that he can put it in a realistic way inside his creations. And I love that, because once you know that thing about him, you understand the way he writes.
Oh yeah, everything. I completely relate to that, because like, as an engineering student, like, science and like everything is fascinating, but I could not sit around just like doing research all day just for the research's sake. Like, I need to actually be making something with this science. So that makes so much sense whenever it comes to, like, putting it into a book. I just never considered it that way. So that is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad he find a way to live with his side the way he wants to live with his scientific side. Because he's an artist, too. He actually said that he's got the scientist and he's got the artist. I think the most prevalent is the artist, but with a heavy importance of the scientific side. So that was a wonderful example of a person that can do both things their own way. So yeah, there's something I want to mention and to just I was just to mention it because it's dangerous territory, but we see in Storm Knight that the powers have different physical states, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You have been told that Storm Knight is a gas.
Carefully, yes, get into careful, this.
But you have been told that Storm Knight is a gas. And you have seen solid investitures, so it's only natural that there's going to be liquid investiture. And it's only natural to assume that that may happen in every other world. Yeah, in every other magic system. With some similarities and some differences.
And then again, in Storm Knight, we've also seen solid investiture. Yeah. With Sharp Blade. And I don't know if the Honor Blade probably as well. We don't have a confirmation on what...
There's exactly, very little mention about them.
Well, type of investiture they're made of, but it is solid investiture, essentially.
I mean, maybe. I think you can say that, Elena.
Oh, okay. I'm just nerding out over here, and I was like, wait, does that mean that there's a plasma investiture?
I would love to see that.
And I just sent that in the
I would love
chat.
To see that. I
didn't even put together, like, the that solid and the
really
gas.
That would be really interesting.
So, like... Oh my gosh, now I feel like I need to be taking, like, scientific
again,
notes on
everything. Cell. That's basically what's happening on Cell with the door, because it's essentially plasma
kind
in the cognitive realm. That's why it's so dangerous to travel to Cell.
True. Yeah.
So...
Although Cell is a special case.
Maybe. And I think that's very interesting potential material for Era 4 in Mistborn, probably. Or
the saga,
I mean, the space era of the Cosmere. That's going to be very interesting. Fuels, investiture as a fuel for, I don't know, machines, stuff. We're starting to see that happen, but in a more mechanical way because of the states of the civilizations we are seeing. But, well, there's no limit to this.
I mean, Roshar is basically starting the equivalent of the Industrial Revolution, even though...
In a weird way. Yeah. It's very hard to place on a timeline.
Eras aren't, like, exactly equivalent. Yeah.
Human time. So we have these very interesting connections between books, between magic systems, and the state of this thing that we call investiture, that it's very hard to define, but it's much more easily explained with examples, because it's a thing. It's like a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, apart from that, it's very interesting to also to compare and contrast the way that civilizations evolve in the different books, because on the Stormlight Archive you have this weird mixture between Industrial Revolution and medieval society with the nobles and all that stuff.
Yeah, and then we have the more advanced things, like the fact that they have an airship. They have an airship, they have, like, anti-investiture,
almost.
Which is essentially the equivalent of antimatter.
It's weird, because that flying ship, it's like a...
Yeah, it's just very
like
strange.
Like a ship to... It's not like a plane. It's more similar to a cruise, but that can fly. A cruise ship.
Basically. And actually, I've heard this from Craig from the Legendarium, who was in Brandon's house, that's the shape they want the, like, lair... in the Cosmere house to be, and so he says it's shaped like the fourth bridge, and that when he saw it in Rhythm of Reason, he immediately saw the relationship to how the lair looks like. So that's really interesting.
So what about your thoughts on Ferrokimi so far and snapping?
Okay, so if we're going to be allowed to do like full spoilers for everything else, I will say that the way that Mistborn, specifically, I guess, because at first I thought it was all, like, allomancy, but apparently the allomancers existed before the Lord Ruler came into power. It was just Mistborn, possibly, that did it. Possibly. And so I'm seeing a relationship. It may be a pattern that just, like, happens and wasn't meant to be there, but I personally am seeing a relationship between allomancy and the, like, Knight's Radiant on Roshar, and then Ferrokimi and the, I don't know what you would call them, because I guess the fused, but, like, before they were fused, like, whenever they just were able
the
to
singers.
Use their powers.
Yeah.
The singers?
The singers, yes. I guess,
The singers, yeah.
Yeah, and so their whole thing of, like, the people that were possibly, like, native to the area that have the power, and then a possibly, like, invading force, because they were talking about how only the Terrasmen have the Furukami, and, like, other people had been kind of subjugating the Terrasmen before the Lord Ruler completely screwed them over. And so I wonder, I guess there are Terrasmen Allomancers. Sorry, I'm working this out as I'm saying it, but it's reminding me, the Mistborn and the creation of the Mistborn are reminding me a lot of the Knights Radiant, and how in Rhythm of War they were talking about how the Knights Radiant, like, have too many powers, mm-hmm. and they weren't supposed to have these powers, and that, like, 9 is the true number, and that 10 comes from them being, like, from off-world and wrong. And so just seeing, like, how Allomancy is stronger physically reminds me a lot of how there's that extra power for the Knights Radiant. And I think that's interesting. I don't know if there's supposed to be a pattern there. But since we have seen the singers develop so much, and, like, that whole thing, like, where you can be a Knight Radiant and a singer, I want to see more of that happen, where we have, like, people with Furukami that have Allomancy that aren't, like, completely evil, and see what they would do and how they would use their power. I think it would be fascinating to have that kind of mirroring happen in a way that I think it's already sort of happening,
that was,
but
so
less
wonderful.
Concretely.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that was very, very interesting, Yelena. I can definitely see a pattern there with
yeah,
the difference of the...
I haven't picked up on that.
I mean, we know that the investiture in Rosher is... It can think on its own because we have Spren involved. And so far, mm-hmm. I don't think we see that on Skadriel. There may be a reason or there may not be a reason for that.
But then again, I think that's just because... of the way the shards work. This is dangerous territory, but it happens on Sel too. The Saiyans aren't Skazi, are splinters of dominion and devotion. And, well, the Spren are splinters of honor, and we don't know how that works with cultivation, but presumably splinters of cultivation as well. And we know the Unmade and the Vorspren are splinters of Odin. We do have that confirmed. Cultivation is just strange.
It's mysterious.
Yeah.
And the dragon.
Also, Elendi was Elendi yes. was an Allomancer, though.
Yeah.
But Elendi wasn't terrorist.
I think that we
Elendi
should probably put the Elendi being a mist. How was it? Misting, that's it. We should probably leave the discussion about Elendi being a misting for the third or second book, because probably this. Yeah,
I would say Hero of Ages.
Because there are some stuff in there that may be dangerous, but.
Yeah.
I just thought of this because I don't know, I didn't put two and two together before, but I figured that. Sorry, this is relating to the snap, sort of like, and how that happens.
Yeah.
But do you think, and you probably already know the answer to this, but Rashik, do you think that he, like, snapped whenever he went into the cave thing, the Well of Ascension, or did he become a Mistborn at that time, or was he, like,
guess
already
the
a Mistborn? Because
guess the
Mistborn
answer.
Did not exist, therefore
it's
he could
Raffo.
Not have been, okay, I don't know why I didn't put that
Raffo.
Together, so I wonder Raffo. If you can
there's
have,
a reason.
I wonder if you can have Furukamists that are naturally born Mistborn, or if they have, if you can, like, naturally possess both.
No, no. It's okay. We know so far.
Don't have to answer any of this.
We know so far.
I know a lot of it is Raffo.
Is genetic.
Yeah, there is an answer,
it's
but it's a Raffo.
Recessive gen or some. I know very little about genetics and stuff,
gene.
But I think it was mentioned somewhere that it's a recessive gene. So if you find the Furukamist,
and it's in the spiritual DNA.
Nice. So if you find a Furukamist that can actually have a
yes, because
the biological
DNA.
Children and get the necessary pairing with allomantic gens, I don't see a reason why it shouldn't.
Yeah, thing is, Furukamists were isolated for so long that it's really hard, like, back in the time of the final
Empire.
Yeah,
this would have
to
be, like, centuries down the line, probably, just to have, like, the mixing of genes properly. But okay, cool. Sorry, I don't know why I didn't put two and two together that he wasn't born beforehand.
No, it's okay.
So this
you
is
didn't
just
know that. Maybe he's
things.
Not, or maybe he didn't. We don't know anything about his parents so far. And you will get the answer of how he became a Mistborn soon. If you keep reading The Well of Ascension, you will get it soon.
All right.
But
then.
Something that has just crossed my mind, and I think it's actually very interesting, is regarding this wave of physics and sound physics that we have on Rhythm of War and on
I think I know where you're going.
The other day
with
I was reading a particular part of Oathbringer in which Dalinar is consumed by the thrill in one of his flashbacks, and he's fighting one person in a huge battlefield, and he's consumed by the thrill, and he's killing and killing and slaying people with his sharp blade. And he can actually, he starts to see the border of his vision starts to become red. And he can actually feel like a beat to the killing he's doing. He can actually sense like a rhythm sounding when he moves his sword and kills the people. And we know so far that this real thing was a spren, an unmade.
Thinking Odium yeah. Stone.
So we see there Odium Stone. And it reminded me a lot of the way that you have the bronze Alamancy describe on Mistborn. Because you can hear these beatings that are very difficult to differentiate from one another. And they relate to the power of a specific investiture. So I see a connection there.
Yeah, and Brandon has said bronze misting or a Mistborn on another planet could detect a Surgebinder using their powers if they knew what they were looking for.
These kind of discussions make me so eager for the crossovers. I want to see an Allomancer on Vosher.
I'm just in shock right now considering the possibilities.
I know. And we are certain now that we have some Volcanist on Rosher doing stuff with important people. So it's like, my god.
Yeah, we have a couple of Volcanists on Rosher.
See Mistborn there messing people around. I mean, we have already seen Hoyt being an Allomancer, well, but other yet than someone Hoyt, different. But,
yeah.
Okay, first of all, what?
Yeah, Hoyt has used Allomancy in Words of Radiance, quite obviously.
He used Allomancy.
Yeah, Hoyt gained Allomancy. How?
Okay. How he get Allomancy? It's a
Allomancy, and I think he can use Verukami as well. How? I don't know. We know the answer for Allomancy.
Wait,
we don't
is he
know
a Verukami?
But we've seen him use Allomancy in Words of Radiance in Shallan's flashback. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so.
Oh my.
I can check the copper mine. Anyway, in one of Shallan's flashbacks. We see Hoyt dump some dust into a cup of, like, wine or whatever. So, yeah, Allomancy, obviously. And we do have hints of him performing more emotional Allomancy than anything else.
Also, I think at the end of Oathbringer, when he's talking with this little kid, I think he stole the little kid a little bit, too. But on this flashback, on this Shallan flashback on Words of Radiance, it's very obvious because Shallan points out that he was putting something on a drink. She's like, oh no, he's going to poison my dad. Then he gulped the thing on himself and she was like, wait, what was that? And then he started to talk with important people.
Okay, now I know what's going on with Furukami. Okay, this is going to be hard to address without spoilers. Hoyt has access to a version of Furukami that I can't explain more without spoilers. It's strange. But he has access to some Furukami.
That's probably a
wrap-up
for Era 2.
You know where I'm going with this, Alf. Sorry.
Like, so you're just gonna leave me with that. Like, I'm not even gonna find out in this book or the next. I'm just gonna be stuck with this for months wondering. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You can read the first Era 1 book in like one day because it's super fast, it's super entertaining and very short. Hilarious. We have hilarious characters in Era 2.
Although some people don't like
them. Some people has bad taste.
I know a couple of people. Yeah, some people have problems.
I either love or hate my stuff.
Alf has no pity That's for people that don't like them.
Sure.
Okay, so do we want to move on to some other things just so we don't get too caught up talking about Hoyt? Because I know we could spend hours just discussing Hoyt.
Okay, yeah. I want to talk about snapping quickly and the spirit web. So Kelsier mentions that he snapped in the Pits of Hathsin, and that's how he became a Mistborn. And he mentions that Vin must have snapped when she was very young because of the traumatic conditions she lived in and because Rin beat her and things like that. He also mentions that if Elend were an Allomancer, they would have known already because he nearly died a couple of years earlier. And so snapping is generally what happens when a large trauma like occurs in somebody's life and it breaks somebody's spirit web. And that's what allows the investiture from the shard that powers Allomancy to finally be able to work, because you also have to have the spiritual DNA for that. And similar to what happens on Roshar, you've probably noticed that almost all the radiants are broken in some way. And I use broken with
air quotes. Yes, we know that investiture is meant to fill in the cracks. At least on Skadriel, on Roshar.
In Spirit Web.
We know nothing almost about Elantris cell, and we know very little about how good the breath of Nalthis fill the breaks of a person. I think it's probably very different on Nalthis, because everyone has
has a breath.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know how it works when you have a ton of breath, but at least we can say that here in Skadrial and in Roshar, this magic or this thing, this investiture, is there feeding the cracks. And the pain and the suffering is kind of a necessary condition to get access to these things.
Normally, but yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the trigger moment, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, for example, was it Lopin? But I don't know, it's debatable. Because you can tell that, like, from a little bit of Dawn Shard, you can tell that Lopin is hiding a lot of those things, like, behind his upbeat attitude. So maybe that's it. But yeah, most of the time, you have at least something that will allow Investiture to come in and fill your spirit web. And so yeah, moving on. I also talk about the medals, like the actual Ferrokami and identity. That's the other one.
Oh, concepts. Interesting concepts to talk about.
This is going to be a slippery slope, so we have to be careful.
Yeah.
But thoughts like on the medals, on their relationship to other magic systems, because again, the epigraphs are the first part of Rhythm of War. I want to talk about the ATM a little bit and about a couple of connections with Roshar there. And the mysterious medal they gave Vinette Credixion, and well, the 11th medal, of course.
So I think maybe we can talk a little bit about identity, because it's been mentioned on Rhythm of War and Oathbringer, especially connected with the Bondsmith powers. But we have to be careful, because there's very important lore dropouts
very
about
careful.
Identity as a Cosmere-wide concept on Era 2. Yeah. But well, identity. It's kind of hard to explain what it is. It has to do with the spiritual part of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we have mentioned the realmatic theory on the first episode, but just to summarize it, it's three realms, cognitive, physical, and spiritual, and this thing, identity, it's kind of anchored on the spiritual web that makes a person on that particular realm. So it has it's kind of like the soul or the mind and the feelings all mixed up on that plane.
Who you are.
It's probably very oniric scenery, the spiritual web. We haven't seen much of it. when have we seen the spiritual realm? Probably connected to Dalinar.
Not really. Yeah, when Dalinar opens a perpendicularity because he brings all three realms together. Other than that, never. And Brandon refuses to give us answers.
It's important to mention that the shards live mainly on the spiritual web, as I understand. So whenever you have a big shard moment in which any of them is actually participating on the events, you may get a glimpse or a mention about that. But we should probably leave that for the Hero of Ages discussion, because we're going to be able to connect much more things.
Yeah, but the one thing I wanted to connect to Ferrokami there was how a Ferrokamist's metal minds are keyed to their identity. And so no other Ferrokamist can use them, and Vin can't burn, says it's metal mind. Just gonna leave it there. Thoughts on the connections with Roshar, and I want to talk about ATM, but I want Alana to start to see where she falls on this. Because this is a dangerous conversation for all of me in regards to spoilers.
This is probably the easiest connection to make, and I don't think it's a real connection. But I hear ATM and I hear Odium, and my brain goes, they must be connected. They sound similar. I don't think they actually are, though. It's just a thing where my brain goes, is that a thing? Honestly, I have not many connections, although I want to know what the heck a shard blade is made out of and all that stuff. And shard plate, like, okay. Like, I know technically it's made out of a sprint, but, like, what does it turn into whenever the sprint dies? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, theories are,
I need to know. Okay, anyway.
Ten of Astium or Corvarium. Yeah, it's from that art in Rhythm of War, and since I'm not at home, I don't have Rhythm of War with me, but we don't know what the name for Cultivation's vessel is, so we don't know how her god metal would be called. But they say it's probably a mix
I like
of those.
To think that it's probably
Tenavastium. Theory right
okay.
now.
All right, then.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, because it's technically a spoiler for Well of Ascension, but not really, because you find out in, like, the first chapter, or the very first few chapters, about the aluminum, and how that was the metal that stripped Vin of her other metals at the end of the Final Empire, because they never actually say at the end of the Final Empire.
Exactly.
But
Yeah.
That was part of my guess because of how that works in Roshar. Yeah, and how it can strip the radiance of their powers. And so when that popped up, I was kind of like, oh, there's a metal doing something. So I was very excited to see that. But I find it interesting that it's
alloy
and how like they're trying to work out the
it's an element
alloys and how that all works. So
I'm pretty sure.
Again, just something I find fast.
Oh. Yeah, aluminum is an element, right. But they're trying to figure out the alloys of aluminum.
Because
there has to be something that's paired with aluminum.
Yeah.
Aluminum just blocks all investiture.
Yeah, because in Well of Ascension, they have the aluminum alloy that does something. I'm not going to give that spoiler away. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to see how these metals are similar across the planets. I didn't know if that would be kept similar with the Cosmere physics. But yeah, I've been so curious about why it's aluminum that works like that in Roshar, that whenever they were talking about metals, I'm like, I gotta wait for something with aluminum to pop up. But I don't know much about any of the other metals or how that would work. I would be interested to see if, like, how Spren would interact with
Cerberus. Okay, you're going in the right direction.
Because I know that Navani was using certain metals with her Fabrials. And like if you use a certain wire with a specific type of Spren, then they react a certain way. And so I think that would be interesting to see more of. But I also just love all of Navani's parts, so that's just me wanting more Navani and engineering.
Because at the beginning of Rhythm of War, when they were releasing the preview chapters, everybody was seeing these epigraphs and they were like, oh my god, connections to this board, just you wait until the end of Rhythm. It was so funny. Drew McCaffrey has told the story a couple of times because he got an ARC for his co-host on Inking Out Loud, Rob, and Drew is a beta reader. And so Rob was freaking out over these early cosmic connections, like in the epigraphs. And Drew was like, oh, just you wait. And so, yeah.
Also, the way they mix the rhythm, it's kind of an alloy, if you think about it.
Yeah. They're trying to find the right balance of each. Gosh, this is making me want to go reread everything, and I don't have the time for that. Like, y'all, my major is just going to become, like, Sanderson Studies.
You should join
like,
the Sandersonian Institute of Cosmere Studies.
I don't have the time!
Yeah, the other thing is, we've seen another god medal on Roshar, one that's actually confirmed, just finishing up with the Atium conversation.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? Medals, god medals, anything else? I am very careful here because I just don't want to make a mistake.
Yeah, other than the fact that I did not know that god medals were a thing and literally just learned that, I don't have anything to say about that, just that, again, mind is blown and I'm freaking out. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say is I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on Well of Ascension and how the metals work in there and all the alloys that they come up with, and I have so much to think about just from talking to you guys today.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Raysium. We've seen it on Roshar and it's confirmed, unlike Hanavastium and whatever Cultivation's God Metal is, which are mostly theories. We know they're there, but we just don't know their names or what they do. But we've seen Raysium and we know what it does. It's a conductor for investiture, and that's the metal that Raboniel uses in the Herald Sucking Knife. The anti-investiture knife, essentially. And so we know that Raysium conducts investiture, and I think it's also on the fused spears. Like, it has aluminum and Raysium, because it's described as gold-white metal, which are essentially the colors of Odium. Gold is really associated with him. Everybody's like, oh, red. No, red is corrupted investiture. And so, yeah, we've seen that there. We know what it does. And I can't wait to find out more.
So, well, maybe we can talk about a little of felt.
Okay, I want to talk about a couple of Worldhopper things.
Yes, this is like...
Felt.
First of all...
Did you catch him?
Did you catch him, Hidden?
Did you recognize
his name
from somewhere
felt.
Else?
So,
no,
I didn't get him.
I don't remember these people, and I feel so bad now. Where would I have seen... Wait, is Felt
he's
the
a scout.
Kid from the beginning?
On Roshar? No. Yes, he's a scout.
In Stormlight Archive, he's one of Dalinar's scouts, and he shows up and he travels to Trasmar with Adolin and Shallan.
He also goes with Dalinar to visit the Night Watcher.
They're actually talking about how he knows his way around strange places.
So where did he show up in this book?
And in this book, he's a house venture guard, and he shows up at the end when Elend is talking to
he's
all
a spy.
And his father and everything.
And he's the one that tells Elend that Vin and the crew are Ska and are a thieving group rather than a noble family. He's the one that finds out. So yes, he's always moving around important noble people, and he's always making himself very useful for them.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's this guy. He was working with Ventures. He was working with Dalinar. He was considered trustworthy. We know that he's like 100 years old, apparently, because of the time skip between.
Dilation.
I mean, he's gotta be old. He's gotta have a way to survive for longer than a normal human being.
I mean, he is a world hopper. He's probably been to like.
He probably knows stuff.
And like gotten some breaths or something. Who knows?
So, yeah. I mean, the thing about him is that it's so random.
Yeah, I completely did not catch that. So
this person shows up in these two very different sceneries. You're like, what? This insignificant guy?
And it's
funny
because actually the reason we realized he was a world hopper, I've heard the story on Shardcast a couple of times before, is that when they were doing like the copper mine, I don't know if it was for Words of Radiance or Oathbringer, I think it was Words of Radiance, they had two articles for Felt, and they're like, wait, two people with the same name, which is very strange in fiction, and that just defy the naming conventions, like in Roshar. And then they asked Brandon, and Brandon confirmed he was a world hopper.
He's describing on Roshar, he's described as, his eyes are too big, he's similar to a Shin. He's mentioned in a very sketchy way that he's a foreigner person. Mm-hmm. And he's also making fun of Dalinar when he talks about chickens, because we know that chickens are everything on Roshar. Every single bird is a chicken.
Every type of bird on Roshar. Roshar have that tendency.
Every bird is a chicken.
Every bird is a chicken, every liquor is a wine. Every, what else is it that they do that with? Every magic is surge binding. Like, they would call Alamancy surge binding. Yeah, Felt was just a little aside. We don't know much about him, but it's interesting.
Yeah, especially since, like, we get a lot less information about him than we do, like, Hoid, who is a very clear world hopper. I kind of assumed that Hoid was the only one. So now,
I mean,
I am very interested.
A little bit about the Mu on future episodes, but he's also a world hopper, and we also have Galadon from Lantris becoming somehow a world hopper.
Oh.
Yeah, we see them in the Pure Lake interlude in Way of Kings. I don't remember which is which, but they're there.
So
Hoid is talking with Kelsier. We talked about this a while ago, and no, Hoid is disguised and everything, and I just found it funny that Kelsier said, anyone who can survive as long as you have must be good, like talking about how Hoid is an informant and how old he is, and it says that informants don't really live very long, and I was like, oh my god, the dramatic irony here. Well, I mean, Hoid is basically immortal, and he's lived since before the shattering. I can't speak today. And so I just find that really funny that Kelsier mentioned, oh, you must be really good to have lived this long. Hoid is among the best of the best in world hopping. He knows things. He's very skilled. It's on page 313, by the way.
I'm busy reading.
Yeah, chapter 19.
Every time he appears, he's hilarious.
Also, this is the only time in all of the Cosmere he's described as bald.
Not nice. I mean, he's got white hair, which is amazing. Which makes him like, you have in every anime, you have a white hair character that has a lot of power, that is super overpowered, and I always love those characters. And when we see Hoid in a certain part of the Cosmere stories having white hair, I'm like, yes, I knew it. He's this anime character.
Yeah, I just love how in Mistborn, like, you only see him from Kelsier's perspective, and how he, in Roshar, they're like, oh, Hoid, like, he's the king's wit. He's, like, super clever and, like, always making fun of people. And here you really have Kelsier, like, looking down on him and being like, oh, he's just, like, some street informant, and kind of making comments about how he's not that smart, and, like, it's very weird to see coming from Roshar and stuff, where you're like, oh, he's like a schemer. He's like, he's got all these plans going. And so you see him show up and pretty much just like play Kelsier. And yeah, you're like, oh crap, what is he doing there? Like, what am I missing? No, go back and talk to him. I need to find out more. And so it's really interesting that he like only shows up for that small little bit, because it almost made his absence throughout the rest of the story stand out more. Of like, yeah, he's around. He's just not involved in that.
Yeah. So Hoid has a way of knowing where to be at the right time. He doesn't know why.
Yeah, I think, didn't he mention that just recently in, like, Rhythm of War?
Yeah, he does. I don't know where in what book they mention that, but yeah, Hoyt has some manipulation of fortune to know where he should be and at what time. Yeah. Yeah, there isn't that much to talk about right here. We'll see him show up later in other Mistborn books. But actually, this is the one he is the most prevalent in out of the three of them. But Hoyt knows what he's doing on Scadrial. And well, he clearly got the power of a Mistborn somehow. And so we've already talked about how he clearly uses Allomancy. And the final thing is the Worldbringers. They mention the Worldbringers in an epigraph. It says, "Man had become like a father to me. To this day, I don't know why he suddenly decided that I wasn't the hero." This is talking about the man who found the Landi as the Hero of Ages. "Why did he turn against me, denouncing me to the entire conclave of Worldbringers?" Now, Brandon has mentioned that the names of the Worldbringers on Scadrial and the World Singers on Roshar is not a coincidence. We know that Hoyt is Sigil's teacher, and Sigil is a part of the World Singers. So, what does this have to do? We have no idea, but it's not a coincidence. Yeah, I don't remember what word of Brandon that's from, but I've heard it so many times I know by now.
Yeah, I didn't even notice the mention of, like, Worldbringers. Because it's just such a, like, small little thing in the epigraph.
I want to talk about a couple of things we talked about on the last episode that we weren't able to dig deeper into. The Ascension and the mention of a sliver of the Infinity. The Terror's Prophecies too, but that's really hard to talk about without spoilers. But I do want to get a couple of predictions on those. So, what do you think they are?
Gosh, okay, I'm gonna have to double check that page number. I really need to stop putting my book away. Because every time I do, then I need to look up another thing. Let's see. "If men read these words, let them know that the power is heavy but burden. Seek not to be bound by its chains. The Terror's prophecies say that I will have the power to save the world. They hint, however, that I will have the power to destroy it as well." Honestly, I'm just really getting, like, Wheel of Time vibes from that. But
yeah, I know!
Okay, honestly, that's all I can think of right now, but I'm very curious. I still don't know a lot of, like, the darkness and that whole thing, since I'm in Well of Ascension, but we've seen more about the prophecies, and he mentions earlier, I think, how, like, there's been a lot of things that have been attributed to him that he's not sure if that was the correct interpretation, and so I get the feeling, I feel like this is just the general thing of, like, Vin is probably going to be the real Hero of Ages and all of that, and she's gonna go to the Well of Ascension and do stuff.
I mean, the second book is called The Well of Ascension.
Yeah, and so it feels like she's like, oh, she's more powerful, and so she's probably gonna be the person that fulfills the prophecies, and so I'm assuming that we'll see more there, but I honestly don't have much to say about it currently, other than I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, it's hard to get predictions for some of these things at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, whenever we do a Well of Ascension episode, I'll probably have more there, because I'm already noting stuff down.
Yeah, and those epigraphs are really interesting. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah.
I have to say, though, my favorite epigraphs in Mistborn are the epigraphs from Hero of Ages.
Gosh, I've got to get to Hero of Ages now. I need to, like, whenever my copies arrive, I'm going to power through Well of Ascension, and then you're going to have to deal with me, like, screaming on the Discord about Hero of Ages.
I just hope you enjoy the parts that you can enjoy, and you...
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Yeah, I mean, everything the parts you can enjoy and are not, like, totally heartbreaking and depressing.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Great.
Yeah, it's funny because on the Legendarium, they had a couple of first-time readers. You had Craig and Ryan who had already read them, and then Todd and Ken hadn't read the books, and they just kept saying, "Wait until book three. Wait until book three." And it became such a thing that on their last Kingkiller episode, it is actually titled, "How to Wait Until Book Three." And so, yeah, it's always "Wait until book three" with Mistborn.
I'm going to text you guys whenever I'm, like, crying in the middle of the night because of this, and you're gonna have to put up with it.
It's not nice to go through that alone.
Yeah, well, I already did that for Rhythm of War with Alphadar on it. We had, like, our chat that I texted all the reactions there. I've actually been working on transcribing them to a Word document, so I won't lose those.
Okay, yeah, that's about as far as my predictions go. Just, I'm waiting to see what happens.
So I wanted to talk about the mentions of the Ascension and the Sliver of Infinity, and what does that mean on Cosmere terms?
What I can say is that I remember that the first time I read these books, the Mistborns, I knew so little about Brandon and I had no idea how big this was going to get. So I was like, okay, reading this book, la 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 la, what? And
I think that my breakout, I don't know, mental breakdown with the Cosmere point was when I got to the reveal, the big reveal on the Hero of Ages, because that's when I understood how big this thing was and how connected everything was, because I had only read Words of Radiance and Way of Kings. Oathbringer wasn't out yet, so...
Yeah, I actually read Mistborn after. I mean, I read Warbreaker, then Elantris, then Way of Kings, Words of Radiance, Oathbringer, and then I read Mistborn. And even still in Mistborn, I was half lost on the Cosmere, because there's a lot. So I had caught some of the bigger connections, but yeah.
I just promise it's going to be big and exciting and wonderful. Because Brandon delivers.
Yeah, so they're talking about the...
Yes, I can't wait.
The Sliver of Infinity. So what is a sliver in Cosmere terms? They've talked about this a couple of times on Stormlight. It'll probably give you material for predictions.
We have seen these words of Sylphrena, I think, when she mentioned she's a sliver of honor himself, as well as the Stormfather. I kind of think that these things, the seons,
yeah,
they're probably that too. So, I mean,
yeah, there are a couple of Cosmere terms that are related there. So we have the splinters that are like pieces of investiture from a shard. That's what the Seons and the Skazi and the Spren are for the most part. And we don't know how the Unmade factor into that. But there we have this. I'm not sure if the Unmade would be classified as splinters or slivers. I think it's splinters. And slivers are a couple of options. The people who have held the shard and given it up. The people who have held the shard and have the power run out. And, well, the Stormfather is also a sliver of honor, because basically he's the only part left of honor after honor was shattered, like the only part like with real sentience and like power. So that's why the Stormfather seems kind of more powerful than the Night Watcher and the Sibling, because he's a sliver of honor. And yeah. So yeah,
it's reminiscent of the nature of the shattering of Alanazar.
Yeah, exactly,
that we see this big thing breaking out in smaller parts that gain sentience on their own and develop different but related powers to the thing they were originally when they were together. Because yeah, the Stormfather definitely has some powers that are of his own, but he's also...
Yeah, like the things that bondsmiths could do before and after Honor's death. They mentioned that Dalinar can do things that the previous bondsmiths couldn't.
Mm-hmm. We have a sliver of infinity here, so...
So, what do you think that is referring to?
Yeah.
Prediction time.
Okay, well, that actually clears some things up, because I know I sent it in the chat, I think, last time we were recording, but I was so worried that we were going to have another...
Oh, my God.
Odium and Taravangian thing whenever Ven killed the Lord Ruler, because I was like, oh, God, no, don't kill him, because then you have to take on the thing, or you probably will. And so I was so freaked out about that, because I had just finished Rhythm of War, and that was still so clear in my mind. But I'm just looking at page 82, whenever it says, the Lord Ruler is the Sliver of Infinity. He's a piece of God himself. And so I don't think he himself is a piece of God, but it does make sense if he previously held a shard or had a shard stripped from him or something like that, because I do think that there is, in the like deepness, the darkness, that does remind me kind of a shard with the mists and everything there. And so how everything happened after Rashik took on whatever he did to become a Mistborn, I get the feeling that he kind of either held a shard for a short period of time, or he tried to take it and then was not allowed to, or something like that. I'm not entirely sure how shards work, but that makes a whole lot more sense as to why Vin didn't encounter a shard whenever he died. Because I've been wondering about that. I've been wondering about that so much. Because I took sliver and shard to mean the same thing, not like sliver as a piece of a shard.
Yeah, there are a couple of Cosmere terms that get very confused, and Brandon has had to actually canonize a couple that he didn't think were necessary. The term vessel, we didn't have for a long time. We used to call it shard holders. Again, things you learn on Shardcast, until they said, Brandon, we need a term for this, and so Brandon canonized vessel. But so we have the shards that are the pieces from Maiden Alcium. We have the splinters that are the small pieces of the shard, like Spren, the Seon, the Skazi. And then we have the slivers that are like these people who've held the shard before and given it up, or have the power run out, or any number of things, because slivers are strange and we don't know much about them. And nice segue is talking about Odium and Taravangian, to talk about the Ascension and what the Ascension means in Cosmere terms. Because it's capital A Ascension, and we mentioned this last time.
Intensifies.
It's a very slippery slope, because we can't mention
I think it's safe to point out
that it's a term that starts with a capital A whenever it's used.
Yeah.
So
important. Yeah, it's hard to talk about the ascension like an actual definition, but we've seen that term Teravangian ascended to Odium, and well, the Well of Ascension is called the Well of Ascension.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've talked about it regarding the Shadow
Ring.
We've
seen that on Secret History.
Secret History, yeah. But we can't talk about Secret History because that's the most spoilery Mistborn thing ever. The Secret History episode is gonna be really fun. Yeah, other than that, I don't remember.
I'm gonna be screaming all the time.
Yeah, Secret History is gonna be a fun episode. Anyway, regarding that context, because I don't think we can give a definition without spoilers, but regarding that context, predictions, what do you think the Ascension means in Mistborn?
Ilana, you are the only one allowed to try to give a definition.
Yeah.
We are definitely going to make a mistake if we do.
I am assuming, making an uneducated guess, that to ascend in the Cosmere is to become a shard holder, to become a vessel for a shard, as Odium, or as Teravangian ascended to Odium. And so if we are going off of that very iffy definition that I just gave, then my previous iffy prediction would make sense in that, like, or guess, in that, like, at the Well of Ascension, you would ascend to become a vessel and then destroy the evil in the
world.
Yeah,
what shard do you think it
possibly?
Is? I'm curious.
Yeah. I get the feeling it's something like obedience or something like that because of the Lord Ruler, but I honestly...
Yeah, it's hard.
I don't know. Like,
oh, but
death?
That's very nice.
Destruction?
Yeah, okay, so we have
something
two
like
shards
that.
On Skadriel. I can't tell you that. And the other thing is that a previous incarnation of one of them showed up in Aether of Night. Aether of Night isn't canon. The magic system is. I can't wait for that book because I loved Aether of Night despite its problems.
Obedience is very interesting. I have never heard that option mentioned as a shard, so it's very interesting. To have a shard.
By now we know 14 of 16 of them. And we have guesses on the other two because of words of Brandon.
But yeah, so maybe moving on lighter topics.
Yeah,
good
idea.
What about the cinematic fight scenes and the way that the fights have changed on Mistborn to Roshar, to the little fight scenes we see on Warbreaker or Elantris? What about that? We see a lot of these very capable characters that have trained for a long time on something, on a skill, and that skill may or may not be connected to the powers they have. So, in the case of Kelsier, I don't think he was extremely over proficient or right on fight until he became a Mistborn. But once he became
He was just very smart.
Yeah.
That's
but
what
he wasn't a proficient street fighter or a gang leader or whatever. Well, he was a gang leader, but he was not, he didn't become one through force. He did it through his wits. So
his wits and his charisma.
Yeah, he was the mastermind, not like the enforcer.
Yeah, I mean, Kelsier was a normal person before he became a Mistborn. He didn't have any powers.
We have on one hand Kelsier fighting with his allomantic skills that are enormous. And on the other hand, we have, for example, the obvious example and comparison, Kaladin, who has been, before his powers, a very proficient spearman, but then got enhanced through the Nahavand when he became an Irradiant. So I think that we see a very, very small fight with Kelsier. I mean, small in the matter of time. It doesn't take long hours or something, the fight he has with the Inquisitor in the first book. But we see him use everything he has regarding allomantic abilities. The thing is, since he depends on allomancy and he's got a very strong contendant, he can't make it last very long. When on the other hand, if Kaladin runs out of Stormlight, despite the exhaustion he's going to feel, he's very capable of taking down pretty much anything. I mean, he killed the Charver.
Exactly what I was going
to say. I love that we see such a different fight scenes in here. These are just, they gave me so many ideas for playing my D&D games. Because you can create characters that are very, well, I don't know, it inspires me a lot. It's wonderfully done. I just love
it. I think that I want to compare it a little bit to other competent characters we've seen, the fight between Kaladin and Seth. it's gonna happen a lot. People say Kaladin when they mean Kaelsir and vice versa. That happens. The fight between Kaladin and Zeth at the hands of Words of Radiance, I mean, they're both using their powers very creatively.
Yes.
Which is what Kaelsir does, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That scene when he's, like, inside the cage and he, like, still pushes the whole cage out. And he, like, holds himself, like, in stasis there so he won't hurt himself in the cage, like, rams against, like, the wall or whatever it was. It's a very, like, as we said, an author's ability to solve problems with magic is proportional to a reader's ability to understand said magic. We understand elements very well despite its mysteries, and so Brandon can use it to solve problems like this, and that dichotomy is like really really interesting. And also, like, for example, Seth in the prologues, well, the prologue of Way of Kings and the way he uses lashing so naturally, it also reminds me of this, and it's also the reason why so many people say what would happen in a fight between Kaelsir and Kaladin. Not that they're ever going to meet because timelines.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I find it interesting how characters' powers work in relation to their skills, like you said earlier. I was really wondering during Stormlight Archive how much of Kaladin's powers contributed to him being good at the spear and what he does. And I feel like we got that answer in Rhythm of War, because he was kind of questioning himself, like, oh, this is how I always survived, like, how I've always been, like, lucky, was because he's been using Stormlight without knowing it. But in Rhythm of War, you have the moment where, like, he's completely without his powers because of that Fabriel, and like ends up still killing the pursuer. I think the fuse that was there, and he does it without any powers, just like,
yeah,
out
he doesn't
of
even have like
and
adhesion, which
very
he does
good at what he does.
Hero.
Yeah, like he has nothing, and he's still able to do that, and so I think it'd be interesting. Like, I think it's interesting how you can see that he trains even without Stormlight. Like, yes, he sucks in Stormlight instinctually, but he's still good at what he does. Whereas with Mistborn and, like, Vin and Kaelsir, they kind of always assume that they will always have that power, and they're just completely powerless without it. And, like, even in Well of Ascension, again, not a spoiler, just, like, a small thing that happens, where she's sparring, and they're sparring with Pewter turned on. Like, they aren't using anything else, because she's sparring with a thug, and so they only use Pewter. But there's no thing of, like, oh, well, let's spar without any metals being used, because they don't even think that that's a possibility.
And thing is, aluminum
exists. Like, that's going to be a weakness down
and
the road.
And Vin was almost helpless when they got the aluminum into her because she didn't have her powers. I mean, really, the only reason she got out of that was Sazed and Delwind.
Yeah.
Especially Sazed.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel like that's an oversight that they should be fixing, because it's already happened once and they know that it can happen again. And so I get the feeling that sometime in either this book or the next, she's going to be caught without any metals. That's just my thoughts on that whole relationship between Kaelsir and Kaladin. Because, like, that seems like the big difference. They're both very good with their powers, but when you take away the powers, can they still do what they need to?
I mean, I would probably say that with the powers, Kaelsir wins, but without the powers, Kaladin wins. Because Allomancy is much more versatile. Just one, well, actually two sources if you are Knight Radiant. I mean, you have so many resources you can... I mean, imagine if Kaelsir makes Kaladin feels overwhelmed by his sadness or something like that. He's done.
Yeah, but then you also have, like, your spren, so it's not like you have a bunch of metal that you have to worry about with the weapon, because whenever the spren becomes a weapon, does that then count as metal
that
for
probably
allomancers?
Does so very dangerous to fight an allomancer, but without the powers, Kaladin definitely wins.
I'm curious what, for example, we know what Razium does. What can an allomancer do with Razium?
I mean, I'm sure they could burn it, but can they use it properly? That's the problem.
I don't know.
How much time does it last? How much time can you burn it? I mean, there's so many variables. But regarding the fighting scenes, I think this is part of Brandon's growth as an author, because I mean, I'm not going to say anything about Era 2. I promise you that on Era 2 you will have characters that are very proficient in situations, very different kind of situations, even without their powers. And they are characters that have had the powers forever. Yeah, I mean, they have always been whatever invested person they are, right? We're not going to get into that, but they're more capable. And on Roshar, you see that the development of a character with abilities and the combination of abilities with magic explored in a much deeper way.
Yeah.
So I love that. And well, actually, if you think about it, it's as if Brandon was starting to get more and more comfortable with fights, because on Elantris, the fights are small. It's very short. They are...
Yeah, it's basically just the sand.
Blasting fireballs, some magic powers, and a little bit of melee fights. On Warbreaker, we don't have an actual fight on Warbreaker, I think.
Vasher versus Dent, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, that's it, because the rest is, like, using Awakening.
It's, again, using the magic to fight the enemy. So I just love the way that he has developed his ability to create these wonderful, very cinematic fights on his books.
Yeah, like, for example, the easiest comparison I could see with Kelsier's fight with the Inquisitors, with one in Stormlight that uses no magic, well, it uses Shardblades and Shardplate, but no magic, is Adolin's fight against the four other duelists. Like, Renarin intervenes, but Renarin can't do much because summoning his Shardblade hurts him. And then Kaladin intervenes with the famous Honor is Dead, but I see what I can do. But before that, it's a very, very cinematic scene. White Spine Uncaged is an evolution of what Brandon did with the fight between Kelsier and the Inquisitor. You see Adolin's dueling style, and in his previous duels, like, Adolin is very intelligent in using his dueling. Like, he does try different strategies, like a straight beatdown, seeming like he's almost failing. And it's these creative uses of martial arts, and that, like, you can practically feel like you're there. There's a reason there are so many illustrations of White Spine Uncaged. Yeah, I think that's just, like, the next step from the original one. But that fight between Kelsier and the Inquisitor is going to be iconic forever as one of Brandon's best fight scenes. Yeah, and isn't this the scene that got Jordan, like, fully hooked on the Cosmere? Jordan from the Sandersonian Institute?
Yeah, I think so. He was very pleased. I mean,
he loves this.
Amazing, yes. It's very pleasing.
Yeah, what else? Perpendicularities. They mention a lake that, like, pulses, like, when they're going to the Well of Ascension. And so I actually got this confirmed the other day because I wasn't able to find it on the Coppermind. Jaffo from however you pronounce his username in the 17th shard confirmed it on the Legendary on Discord that lake is a perpendicularity for one of the shards on Scadrial. And I won't say anything more.
Which lake? The one mentioned on the epigraph?
Yeah.
The one that's mentioned when Alendi and Rashik are going.
Yeah, the one that Alendi can sense with his bronze allomancy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that kind of reminds me of the lake in Elantris, where go and they take the people and, like, release them. I wonder if that is also perpendicularity due to the fact that it kind of, like, releases their spirit, and if that's a connection to the
what
spirit.
What edition is your Elantris book?
I read the 10th, like, the updated edition.
Okay, good.
I read it.
I don't have that one. I need to update my edition to the 10th anniversary edition. Yeah,
I got it from my library, but I need to
read the extra scene.
And so, yeah, that's, like, in Elantris is also a perpendicularity. Fun fact, Brandon put that in and he didn't know what he was going to use it for in the Cosmere. Eventually he decided that was going to be a perpendicularity. That wasn't the plan originally. He just didn't know for what it was there. And so, yeah, perpendicularities are interesting. We'll see more of them in the coming book, so we'll be able to talk about it more. I just wanted to point that lake out. It's interesting.
Yes, and it's from this book.
And I think the final thing is the Ars Arcanum. So I want to talk about the Ars Arcanum. Now, the Ars Arcanum in the early Brandon books isn't as... Okay, so the Ars Arcanums are all written by a person in world. Shall I mention who they are?
Sure.
I don't know how much of a spoiler this is. It's Chris from White Sand.
And it's not said in any book.
Yeah, it's not said in any book.
It's not said in any book. It's a words of Brandon stuff talked about on the fandom.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's Chris from White Sand. She's a scientist and she works with Silverlight, and so she writes all the Ars Arcanum. And you can tell more of, like, that it's written in world and the Ars Arcanum, like the ones from Stormlight.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more just like definitions and those things, more like typical glossary. But yeah, the Ars Arcanums are written by Chris. She also wrote the essays for Arcanum Unbounded. And yeah, we'll talk about the Scadrial essay when we finish Era 1.
Since you mentioned a little bit earlier Silverlight and Chris being a part of that. Would you like us to talk about what Silverlight is a little bit? Because it's also a thing that it's not explained in any book.
Yeah, no, it's not in any book. Essay, it's a word of random thing.
But it has a body of its own, the concept. I think it's building up, but it's not in a canonical book.
Yeah, not yet, because Brandon hasn't gotten to the Silverlight novella. Anyway, Silverlight is a university in the cognitive realm where a lot of the Cosmere scholars study, and Chris is affiliated with Silverlight. I think she was actually one of its founders.
Yes.
We know that White Sands takes place before anything else in the Cosmere, including Elantris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. White Sands is the thing that's closest to the Shattering in the timeline for now, until we get to Dragonsteel.
So yeah, she's from there, and she's the writer of the Ars Arcanum on every book. She's the writer of the essays on the book Arcanum Unbounded, the real-life book Arcanum Unbounded. And she doesn't show up on this trilogy.
But she's shown up a couple of times throughout the Cosmere. We'll see her later.
I mean, apparently she's been there.
Yeah, she's been on schedule.
Of Era 1, because she knows a lot of stuff about Cosmere. So yeah.
So a couple of fun facts from the books. I got these mostly from the annotations. So Brandon initially wrote two books, Mistborn and The Final Empire, during those years. He wasn't published. We mentioned before that he wrote 13 books before he wasn't published. And so two of those are called Mistborn and The Final Empire. And eventually, like, they both had their strengths and their problems. And after publishing Elantris, he decided he didn't want to use Way of Kings Prime as the second book, for obvious reasons that I can tell you, having read Way of Kings Prime now. It's a really good book, but I understand why Brandon didn't want it to be his second still. And so he decided to write another instead, and took inspiration from those two previous books, like in the characters and the plot and the magic system and the heist movies. And so that's the origin of The Final Empire, the one we know nowadays. Also, Mistings didn't exist in the original Mistborn book, or emotional allomancy. Like, none of those things existed in the original version of Mistborn Prime, I think Brandon calls it.
I think it was mentioned on one of the Sandersonian Institute episodes that Brandon took the idea of Ferrochemy. I mean, no, he didn't take the idea. He created Ferrochemy inspired by his desire to not having to sleep. Yeah. Because he's got a lot of sleeping problems. Mm. He's got insomnia, and at some point of his life, he worked the night shift of a hotel or something like that.
Yeah, that's non-published books. I mean, he's a full student. He worked at the hotel and he wrote. And so he wanted to be able to, like, store sleep so that when he couldn't fall asleep, to be able to, like, stay awake and not be tired. But when he needed to fall asleep, he could actually sleep properly. And so that's where the idea for Ferrochemy comes from.
And I mean, don't we all want that power?
Oh, yeah.
when we're going through university, don't we all?
Yeah, and as someone with, like, chronic fatigue,
days and then
that just sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Like, even just in everyday life, that would be so nice to have.
Yeah, I mean, every Ferrochemical ability is amazing. There are some that I would really like to have that are mentioned on Era 2, but regarding the ones we see on Era 1, I would really like to store eyesight, because to wear glasses. I would like to store eyesight. I would love to store sleep. Can you store hunger? I mean, food, energy, something like that?
There's something related to that. I forgot how the ability was called. And then we have the super weird ones that we find out in the Ferrochemy table and the Ars Arcanum from Era 2, because they never mentioned them, like, in the book. And I want to learn more about those. I want Lost Metal to come out soon, because those are very strange ferrochemical abilities.
Yeah, we all do, and we will talk about it in some other episodes. Well, yeah, Ferrochemy is amazing, especially the sleeping store.
Yeah, because I don't think weight would be that useful, like, here, especially without...
I think it will.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I think it would be useful in very specific situations, but I don't know if the situations come up often enough. Like, for some people, maybe, if you're, like, a construction worker or something, but...
Yeah. If you're, like, a gymnast.
You could be hired as a weight. A human weight to be used in a construction site or a gym or whatever. I mean, the first use I would give to that is, in my country, sometimes the cars ignore the red lights when they're green, and suddenly become yellow and then become red. Some people decide that they never stop being green and they keep going.
Oh, so yeah, I would love to have that power.
That's every country out there, yeah.
I would love to have the power to store weight and become super heavy, and whenever they decide that the red light is still green, I would stand up in the middle of the street and say, nope, no, it's my turn now, you won't pass.
Oh my gosh, I'm just imagining you doing that, just like turning and looking them dead in the eye.
I got this, oh my, imagine, do you remember that scene from Twilight movie in which this
Never
vampire
watched
dude,
Twilight.
Me oh, either.
Fortunately, it's a part of my teenage years, so I did. But there's this very cheesy moment in which a guy stops a car with his hands because he's super powerful. And
yeah,
the car
I think I
gets
saw that clip.
Broke. So I would like to do that.
Oh my gosh. Well, unless I'm missing something crazy, I think that about wraps up this episode.
And I'd recommend looking at the annotations because they're super interesting. And Brandon explains some things about yes. physics. Like, he does mention a couple of things that I don't know if they're spoilers or not. But yeah, they're very, very interesting.
Would you like to mention where can they be found, the annotations?
Brandon's website, you go to the part that says books, and then you choose, well, for what book you want to see the annotations, and you'll find those there. I think that the ones he did for Dawnshard and the ones he did for the preview chapters of Rhythm of War are transcribed on the Arcanum. That is wob.arcanum.com or .net. I know, I always forget. Just look for Arcanum Brandon Sanderson and you'll find the WOB.
We'll put the link in the description.
Or, like, thumbs up. Yeah. And from the 17th chart, there are also links to the Arcanum. Just be careful. It's full of spoilers. Some of the annotations are. Anyway, you can also follow us and contact us through Instagram and Twitter under the profile at Worldhoppers Podcast and join the Discord. DM us and we'll get you a link. It's also posted in our Instagram bio. A permanent link is there. You can find me, Cheyenne, on the 17th chart forums under the profile of Cheyenne Sedai. And I'm always looking for people to give me, like, interesting lore tidbit to include in these episodes, sure. And like for discussion, what people think about them. Tell us your feedback, ask us your questions, give us your theories. We'd love to know your thoughts and let us know what you think of the show and what your favorite moments in the Cosmere have been. Again, tell us about your theories. You can, if you want, you can email us at worldpushpodcast@gmail.com or drop that in the Discord as well as on our social media accounts. If you've enjoyed the show, we would love it if you would give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Rating the show helps listeners find us and build a community around it. And make sure to share this podcast with other Brandon Sanderson fans you know, and anyone you want to introduce to the series without overwhelming. We know how hard it can be to try and explain this without overwhelming them.
It can be a lot, yeah.
And so thank you for listening, and remember, journey before destination.
Bye.